Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown Triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Racing fans, come join us for great racing and good times this weekend at
Down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The sun goes down and the moon comes up. I turn into a teenage YouTuber. And I cruise through the city and I roam the streets. When I show up, the Goo Goo Mob.
We're back. Second half. On this Friday, it's At the Races, Twin Spires weekend preview, one of the two biggest weekends of the year. There's no mistaking Arkansas Derby Day and Florida Derby Day at the two venues. James Scully standing by to walk through the activities with us. But before we do anything else, first of all, James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Rick Hammerly with us as well.
Hey, James.
Hey, Hammer. Hey, Hammer.
How are you? Good to hear
you. Good.
Your voice.
Look forward to seeing you guys in Kentucky this spring.
Yeah, you'll see me. Are you coming Friday, Keeneland?
Yeah, I'll come out and see you. Wherever you're going to be set up in the press box.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll come see you Friday morning.
Excellent. All right. No Shap, but we will have Scully and McGee at the very least. So that'll be good.
Plus, that's a double dip. You can't get anywhere.
Plus, we'll hear from Jim Goodman and much more. James, the Kentucky Derby report, if you will, give us some thoughts about last weekend.
Yeah, I'll start with two fills. Obviously, I think others have mentioned, you know, the concern perhaps with him going a mile and a quarter on a fast track on Derby Day. But I thought that was a very sharp final prep. It was a fast race, just as the track record. He won going away. To me, one thing he has going for him is he has 8 starts under him, and he seems to be absolutely peaking right now. And if you look at last year's Kentucky Derby field, you had 10 of the 20 horses in there, had 4 or 5 starts. The winner, Rich Strike, the runner-up, Epicenter, and the fourth-place finisher, Simplification, had all run at least 6 times or more. So those experienced horses were the ones that were there last year, and that experience is an edge for two fills. I mean, even if you don't pick him on top, I think you have to respect him for certain off of that race in the Jeff Ruby. And then as far as Louisiana Derby, you know, I mean, Kings Barn, to me, did not start racing until January. He won his maiden race. It was a pretty nice maiden race, but it was at 7 furlongs. He then went and ran against a real soft field at Tampa Bay Downs, won that race by open lens. And he had everything his own way on the front end of Louisiana Derby. It was a slow pace. The final speed rating isn't going to be one of the faster preps. But this horse is moving forward. He looks like he's a true distance horse. And, you know, I think it's a little bit, contradictory to say, on one hand, you might not think it's the strongest Derby field, or you believe this is a weak crop, and then you're just going to draw a line through a horse that has tactical speed like King's Barn. Because, you know, I think you look back on some of these previous years, 2017, you had 3 different winners of the Triple Crown races. None of them ever won another stake again. And the one thing Always Dreaming, who won the race in the Derby, and even Battle Midway, who ran 3rd, had going for him was tactical speed. They were up there. They could make their own trip. And so Kings Barn has that going for him. You know, he's going to have to keep moving forward over the 6-week interim, but I'm not dismissing him.
All right. What about the UAE Derby? Where are you shaking out on the Japanese contenders?
Well, I think last year, you know, both horses are up there on the lead in the Derby, but I'm just that Derma Satake, he had never really showed speed like that in any of his previous starts. I think it was a smart ride by Christophe Lemaire. I think he thought perhaps there wasn't much pace in there, and when he broke running and struck the front early from the rail, he just kept going. But it's tough for me to envision him getting out of the gate in the 20-horse Kentucky Derby like that. And so, you know, I'm a little bit dubious of his chances. But I will, you know, say, I mean, there's no doubt about it. You have to respect the Japanese horses and how they're starting to fare internationally.
Excellent. All right, we'll keep monitoring, and of course we've got the addition of Mandarin Hero to watch next Saturday at Santa Anita. That gets us to the next topic and the weekend. Where do you want to start?
I'll start at Oaklawn Park. I'll just work backwards. I'll give an opinion on the. I'll just start right with the Arkansas Derby. I thought it was fascinating to see. I think that race, with the addition of Two Eagles River off of that wire-to-wire win at a mile. I read Chris Hartman's quotes. He just says he's training out of his mind. I think that horse is going to show speed. I think Harlow Cap has been training forwardly, obviously, since his last start. And, is going to show speed from the inside. I think that race is going to have some legitimate pace, and I think it's going to set up nicely for Red Route 1. This is a colt by Gunrunner out of a Tappet mare that, to me, he's way better at age 3. I mean, he showed something to that Kentucky Jockey Club because he had a real trouble trip in the stretch, but he has really taken a step forward as a 3-year-old for Steve Asmussen, and I like the addition of blinkers. I like the extra eighth of a mile, and I think it's interesting. You know, Tyrell Gaffleone's been leading rider at Churchill for several years in a row, and Asmussen wins a lot of trainer titles. They combine there to win a lot of races in the summer, and, you know, he's putting Tyler on Red Route 1 and Grand Love Saturday. So I think Red Route 1's going to get the right setup. The other horse I'll use playing multi-race bets is Angel of Empire, sort of a little bit of the same vein where I think he's going to get the right trip. But, you know, I wonder about Reincarnate. You know, you look at his front-running efforts in California. He missed the break last time. I think John D. will be hustling him, and he'll be part of the pace as well. And as far as Rocket Can, I'm just going to let him surprise me. I didn't think outside of Forte that it was a strong group of 3-year-olds at Gulfstream, and I thought he got the right trip in the Fountain of Youth to finish second that day. So I'm going to play against Rocket Can and go Red Route 1 as my top pick in Arkansas Derby.
All right. What else from Oaklawn?
I like, in race number 11, number 2, Breslau, is the kind of horse I like. I mean, really a sharp claim for 30 grand in mid-December. He's stepping up in class in good form. I thought he really ran a big race. I know it was against much lesser, but 2 starts back when he set off the speed. I thought last time out in that starter allowance, he's like dueling on the front end. But this race has more speed. I think he'll sit just right off it with Walter De La Cruz. And I look for him to run a good race in race 11, number 2, Breslau.
That's the 6 furlong first level allowance. Goes as the 11th. I got to ask you about your fantasy thoughts, because it's really a fun race. If you want to be against Wet Paint, you can certainly respect her, and she won't necessarily be a surprise. But as has come up repeatedly the last few days talking about it, she's going to have to pass a bunch, and she doesn't have to win.
Yeah, and it looks like it's going to be sunny all day Saturday. Track might be fast. I don't know how much rain they're going to get yesterday, today. But I like Grand Love wire to wire. After being on the lead in all 3 starts last year, I thought the game plan perhaps was to sit just off it and see how she fares. And, you know, she got a little bit roughed up in the stretch. I thought she hung in there real well for third. You know, she came right back and worked 2 back-to-back bullet 5 for long workouts. And Tyler's coming in to ride her, and I drawn inside. You know, one thing is, you know, you look at this race, and, you know, you might think there's a lot of speed in it, but once Condensation hit the front end, that Honeybee, she went 23-3 and 48. I don't think any of these horses are just like brilliantly quick, and I think Grand Love's going to be showing the way from post 2 with Tyler, and I like her chances on the front end of the price. or at least 8-1 on the morning line, Steve.
It's funny that this keeps coming up between her and she's looking lucky, because I thought that they would be there would be much more, you know, compact pair of pricing on the two of them. I thought that she's looking lucky would be more like 4-1, and Grand Love might be more like 6-1 when it's said and done.
Yeah, and I think that's realistic. I mean, I thought that was too low. You know, I mean, she's looking lucky is going to get bet off of that race against Punch Bowl. Punch Bowl is going to take a lot of money into Ashland next Saturday. So she's going to get bet off that race. But 5-2, no, I don't see it. I mean, especially if what Tate's odds on. You know, you're going to get a situation where, you know, even like Royal Spa could take a little bit of action off of that nice allowance win.
Anything else at Hot Springs?
I like Gunpilot. You know, I know he'll be one of the favorites in there, but I think that Hot Springs, I like the cutback to a two-turn mile race. I still think he could be aiming for some of the later legs of the Triple Crown, or, you know, if he runs well in this race, he'll have another prep and could show up at Belmont or somewhere. So, you know, I think he'll get back on the right track. He didn't have the best of trips in the Rebel, I didn't think, and I look for him to run well in the Hot Springs.
Excellent. All right. Nothing else at Oakland.
Nothing else at Oaklawn. And I'll go to Gulfstream, give my thoughts on the Florida Derby and a couple double-digit long shots on the undercard I'm using. I don't see Mage moving forward off of that race in the Fountain of Youth. Fort Bragg, to me, was real rank and green early in his career, and then I just haven't liked his last two stakes efforts. And Cyclone Mischief, I don't think a mile and an eighth is his best distance. So I'm pretty much against all the horses that are the second through the four choices on the morning line. I'm going to use Forte. I'm going to play Straight Exactas over the one and the two. I like the two better. West Coast Cowboy is a colt that broke his maiden wire to wire at Gulfstream last September. He got a 70 speed rating from us, obviously very slow. His numbers have increased by 10 points in the last two races, in each of the last two races, and his best race yet by far was his first two-turn start in the mile and a 16th Holy Bull. I think that's a horse that's moving forward for Safi Joseph and could get the right ground-saving trip, hit the board maybe second with Sonny Leone. So I got it four West Coast Cowboy in the Florida Derby.
Interesting. I was looking at all those other Safis, and the one that hasn't been brought up yet, the stretch out horse, Mr. Peaks, came over from Ian Wilkes. This C2 racing group that is buying horses at a notable clip. Nautical Star is another one, of course, that Nathaniel Quinonez was training at Oaklawn. So there's these oddball additions to the Safi barn, and both of those horses are stretching out from a pair of 6-furlong efforts. I mean, are they gonna simply help prompt pace? Mr. Peaks is a California Chrome colt, and That maiden win was fast, or not maiden win, but that maiden effort. He continues to be a maiden. That race was fast, and this horse stretches out. He's just kind of a funny horse. I just kind of kept coming back to him and wondering, you know, sort of like what Danny Gargan said: why are all these horses in here?
Right. You got to get, but it's more handle for Gulfstream. I mean, you got to give the racing secretary credit for hustling all these horses. I mentioned another horse. You're playing tries or supers. I'm not taking those back-to-back 5-furlong bullet works for this Ear Miracola too lightly. This is a horse that showed some potential early in his career.
Yep.
He sort of got off form in those stakes races, but he's a gun runner out of a Tappet mare. And, you know, that I'm betting that pedigree in other spots, like with Grand Love and some other horses.
Yep.
So, you know, that horse immediately sort of, that pedigree, or I mean with Red Route 1, that horse's pedigree immediately, you know, catches my eye. Antonio Sano can pop some long shots in the money.
Absolutely.
He's had, this horse has back-to-back fought for a long bullet work, so it wouldn't be the biggest shock in the world if he ran third or fourth in my eyes.
You know, 100% right.
You know, James, a horse in here who you glanced over has got no love at all, and is Cyclone Mischief. And I just bring him up. I watched him closely last time. I said, let's see if he can get back to a little bit of that form he showed two races ago. And he ran pretty good on the lead. He weakened, but he didn't fall apart. And he's coming in here. I guess he's got no love whatsoever. Gaffney only gets off of him.
Goes out of town.
Goes out of town. Yeah, he's riding at Oaklawn, but Castellano jumps aboard. This horse is overlooked. I thought he showed a real improved race last time, and I think he has a shot to hit the board in here. I think he's going to be okay.
I think he's a talented colt. I'm just not convinced he's better at two turns than he is at like a one turn mile. I look at this race. If he doesn't hit the board in here, I mean, would he be like aiming for the Pat Day mile?
Yes,
on
absolutely.
The undercard?
Yeah, we had Dale here yesterday.
Because that race you're referencing was terrific. I mean, that was a really strong effort in that one turn mile. And I thought in the Holy Bull, in the Fountain of Youth, he benefited from being on the lead. And you look at just this setup with all these long shot like sprinter types that have been on the lead in recent starts, and it's hard, tough for me to envision Cyclone Mischief getting a favorable trip.
Okay, just wanted to hear what you had to say, because that type just looks like he might be sitting on a decent one here. They could hit that second spot.
What are those prices you're interested in?
Okay, I'm going to mention Gray's Fable in Appleton. This horse last year, he won the opening burst stakes in his second start back from a layoff. I didn't think he was a bad fifth in that Mint Million last year. He won a stake at Ellis. Came back with a solid runner-up effort at Gulfstream, complete tightener. I look for him to move forward for Brian Lynch in the Appleton. And the other one that I'll mention... was in in the Ghost Zapper, Steve. I'm worried that Simplification is off form. I don't think O'Connor's best distance is a mile and a 16th, and first captain his first race back. I'm like, hey, I wonder if he'll need a race. Number one, Surly Famous. Surly Furious. He was running on the turf and synthetics, and they switched him to dirt last October, switched him back to dirt at Churchill, and he ran fourth in NACAC mile. Then he ran a sprint and a turf race. That third in the Challenger last time was good. That Challenger Stakes was nearly a second faster than Tappet Trice's win in the Tampa Bay Derby a couple races later. And this horse made a move and struck the front in upper stretch. And I think Skippy Longstocking really ran well to beat him. And I think that's a race where, that's a positive effort that he could continue and run another good one in this spot for Glenn Wismer. So I'm going to give him a look at 15-1 in the Ghost Zapper, Steve.
Well, and Surly Furious, a horse we got very familiar with during our stay at Presque Isle. And when he won the mile, really had a lot of fun the next morning, and when we were coming back from Kentucky Downs and spent part of the morning with Glenn. This was a horse that they had hoped to get into the Breeders' Cup, settled for for other spots, and he didn't get the chance in the dirt mile. So I certainly am rooting for Wismer. I would not interpret Simplification as being off form, though, James.
No. I mean, I'm just a little bit worried that. I'm just a little bit concerned about if he's just sharp enough right now in a little bit. He was so good last winter at Gulfstream, and he's like a hard knocker, don't get me wrong, but you know, that was just a little bit concerned. And maybe he does turn it around and run a big race in that spot. Let me give you a last second Friday push, Steve. It's at Aqueduct today, race number four. I thought it was really sort of like a soft group of non-winning types. And I like number five, Gagliano, the six-year-old mare for Oscar Barrera. She's coming off a win against conditioned rivals, and she's listed at 8-1 with Gomez. So I'm going to go number five at race four at Aqueduct, Gagliano.
The LSFP, the last second Friday push. I had to reacquaint my acronym.
I can never remember those letters.
LSFP. LSFP.
SMFT.
So, James, I appreciate it. Good luck this weekend, and I will we'll have you sit in. You can co-host next week because Hammer won't be there.
All right. Well, safe travels. Have a great weekend, guys.
All right, James. Always a pleasure.
James Scully, everybody, and James does a great job. I brought up simplification. Mike Welsh is going to join us here in a little bit. I got a feeling that Mike had hinted with us the other morning that simplification is doing very well coming into this, actually. And I'm
sure he'll have a few little tidbits.
Well, and I've been waiting. You know, I had to put those selections in for the show tomorrow with Seth, and I was hoping that the Clocker report would have gotten up, but it hasn't yet. So,
yeah, you mentioned his last minute Friday pushes, and so he's always on Friday, obviously, and usually I'm on Friday later. And I'll make a little note, and I'll write, like I did here. I'll just put Aqueduct 4 with a number.
Yeah, exactly.
And a few weeks ago, I was
playing. Yeah.
And I looked down, and I went, oh, yeah. I think a horse won, paid 17.8 or something. It was great. So I jotted it down again, and it'll, you know, hopefully I look at it at the right time and put a little wager in. But he's great at those.
The LSFP.
Yep.
Which we crafted, I don't know, a couple of years ago. Because... He would get to the end and he'd say, you know, I got a play for today. Let me and so I had to make I should really get a sponsor for it.
I remember years ago when we used to had the in the afternoon.
The 4 o'clock show.
4 o'clock and I remember being at Del Mar and we'd have the instant release. Somebody would walk in, you know, some train would walk in. Oh yeah, I like my horse in the fourth today. Oh boom. Those are always good, the fresh ones.
And those would always hit.
It's amazing.
The craziest part about
that. The instant release.
I just saw Mike while we were on the break. He's in the paddock with Grenig. They're taping something, and they're just going to come here as soon as they're done. So you should probably take this opportunity to come up with some of your action, because the rest of the show between Welsh and Grenig, Caton Bradar, Andy Biancone, and Lafitte Pinkai the third, LP3, speaking of acronyms, LP3, even Tina calls him LP3. I created that, LP3.
I still call him Lafitte. He's great. I every time I see him, we're going opposite directions. We give a high five, and we just, you know, as we're looking back, hey, I will see you in the next town. So we'll catch up to him soon. Doing the quick handicapping, as listening to these guys, you get a little bit swayed. We talked about, let's go back to Oaklawn here for the, the Oaklawn Mile, which is probably about 4 or 5 years old now. It's turned into a good addition on this day.
Didn't it start as the first year of the April of the
I think it was later in the year.
Yeah, it was closing weekend.
Right.
It was the Derby Day closing weekend, or they instituted the 3-year-old race.
Yeah, I've only been gone, you know, 9 months from there. I can't even remember.
A race like
this works on a big day because someone coming can throw an extra one on the van, you know, it adds to it, which is what it's done here with Hopper coming out of coming off the Santa Anita handicap run where he showed some speed. I mean, I mentioned earlier Caddo River. He loves Oaklawn Park. Came back and you know, won in the slop last time. Doesn't need the slop. And looks pretty good. And Silver Prospector, You know, he's won $1.3 million, but he's only won a couple races at Oakland, even though, you know, he's tried many times. I think he won the Southwest as a three-year-old, and he's had some good performances there, but I don't know. He doesn't seem to run his best race there, so I like Caddo River in that one. We went to the Hot Springs. We talked about 10 Strike, a Marshall's Horse, I and Clover. I had that one. I had the 261 in that spot. Nice to hear Nick. It's nice when you like a horse and Nick jumps on board, too, and sees some things there. So Brad Cox again with Florent Giroux coming in, who rode there last year and coming back and doing that. The fantasy, I don't know. We talked about Grand Love when we first come on the show, and everyone's mentioned him. And so the price, excuse me, her, and so the price will go down just a little bit. Pate, who I think you talked about, I tell you, Mike Maker has gone from, you know, winning, oh, he wins all these long-distance turf races to winning all kinds of races now. He's all over the board, and so you can take the pigeonhole off of him as being a turf guy. You know, interesting enough, you've got another race coming off the mud. What's he going to do? He ran a decent race there. He's going to be a price. First time going long, I don't know. Is it worth a shot? Maybe. And then we're all poo-pooing Wet Paint because all he does is win in the wet, but we don't want the price, right? He's going to be very... They'll jump on him there, I think. So, but Pratt, look at Pratt's record. He's 5-for-11 at Oakland, so he doesn't get on losers when he goes. So, I don't know about this race. Nothing to rock home about. We already talked about the Arkansas Derby. My numbers were 7-10-7-8. Excuse me. Red Route 1 going on with that blinker move to maybe get this horse involved a little bit earlier. Rocket Can we like, and then, you know, once again, you know, we go back to that Angel of Empire. We have to reevaluate, and he might sneak in there at a decent price. So, a good race, and as Nick said, you know, we're looking for a powerful performance somewhere. I don't know if I see one out of that bunch, but
you know what's amazing about Red Route 1 and Steve Asmussen. He has, and granted, he's got a hatful of candidates on the three-year-old front every year. But, in particular, there is always an Asmussen horse like this every single year. And I've talked about it forever. And the first one that I had affection for that I always bring up is Zeniero. And that sort of tripped this running gag. And the one thing about this situation, I'm curious, when Creator, who was a mild, maybe even more than a mild upset, what was Creator when he won the
Belmont?
No, Arkansas Derby. When he won the Arkansas Derby, because he had been second or third in the Rebel, closing. And you know he had and he was a horse it stylistically that same thing that it took him a while to break his maiden, and so I'm curious. In fact, I'm gonna look it up to see if Asmussen has done this before. I can only use the chart, and I don't know if I'm gonna get a blinkers on recommendation. Creator was paid $25.20 to win the Arkansas Derby. That's
he had that Super Stock that won a few years ago was a big price as well. So
but that was a different horse stylistically. I'm talking about these late running,
okay,
the late running Asmussen 3-year olds.
Is this one gray? No.
No. This one though, going back to, and here's Creator with Santana, 11.60. To one, paid $25.20, and Dale's horse, who was it that Dale had? Cupid was actually the 4-5 favorite, and when was dismal in there. But Unbridled Outlaw is who Dale was there with. That's that famous. Whitmore was third. Whitmore was third in the Arkansas Derby. Unbelievable! What a horse!
Trier.
Gettysburg, actually. I'd forgotten that Gettysburg ran there. Gettysburg was a horse that was one of those horses along the way during the three-year-old season I was convinced was going to be the the Belmont was going to be Todd's Belmont horse. Ultimately ended up famously in the Asmussen barn. But okay, creator killed me. The creator absolutely killed me in the Belmont. That was a horrible beat because I was all over the horse of Twin Creeks of Goulat and Eclipse.
Well, I have to pull you up there. Creator was one of the
greatest
days of the
you guys.
Of
I got
racing,
I got a famous picture of you guys going nuts with Jimmy and you and Bobby.
Yeah, no, that was
that's right.
That was at the half mile pole when he started moving. We gave one of our 1/62nd race. He was going to win from there on out, and then it was funny when he wins by a nose. We're all jumping up, and then we stopped. We go, he won, didn't he? Yeah, and he was 13-1 that day. I won't forget that. But that was one of the greatest.
More 16-1.
Was he 16-1?
16-1. 16-1. Destin is the horse
Destin,
that was reaching
right.
for.
That's
that was
right.
brutal.
That was
brutal beat.
That was fantastic. That was and as soon as he won, the skies opened up. I'll never forget that. We're walking down to the inner circle.
I got a nice picture. In fact, I got a picture. I should put up all. You know what? I'll put up these pictures because they're great. If I don't say so myself, I got that the famous picture of Steve Asmussen holding the Arkansas Derby trophy with Dale, and they were both tipping the scales at that time. And then I got a picture. They were so game to smile. Aaron Wellman, Randy Goulat, and I forget who the third was in that picture. They had just taken that incredible beat in the Belmont Stakes, and they were watching the replay. You know when you walk back the tunnel at Belmont, and
yeah.
there's the TV up there. Seth Merrow, how about this? A surprise visit.
Down to get a picture. I got a promo to Bick and Merrow on the road.
Bick and Merrow on the road.
Go.
It's like Hope and Crosby.
We got Maine. They're coming from all over the place. Bick.
what
are you going? What are you doing?
Oh, his glasses flew off the back of his head.
I lost my glasses when I leaned back.
You got to get one of these.
You're right. I absolutely do.
I don't care for that. The eyeglass thing?
No.
Haven't lost a pair of glasses in a long time. I don't want to jinx myself, but
Kip Elzer's got those crazy glasses with the magnet. You take apart the glasses at the nose bridge,
right?
And it hangs down.
Not sunglasses.
And it hangs down. He's had those for years.
Here, I'm going to let you take a picture.
Oh, thank you.
So between the two of
us, hold on. Let me take the headset off so I can.
All right, here we go. This is quite a view here. There we go.
There's a radio show going on. So
Put the mic up to your there. Make it look like you're working.
I will. I'm posing.
All right, there we
go. You've got your headphone off though. But
all right, there we go. We got official.
Official.
There's nothing in here that says Florida though in this room. So you'll have to just superimpose a palm tree in the background.
Yeah, Photoshop some palm trees behind.
No, I put up that picture yesterday of us at Gulfstream. When did you?
Oh, you're right. When did you take that? Oh, I could have pulled that up. Yeah. Okay, I will. I'll pull that up.
I've got several.
Although now we have updated. When was that picture taken? I don't remember.
When was the last time you were here for Florida Derby?
Well, I was here last year.
Well, then I was not. So
that's what I'm saying.
Well, no, maybe I was not.
No, I don't think you were here last year.
Don't look at me. I wasn't.
He hasn't been here in years. Do you want to? You must have been proud of me. I put in my picks at about 5 a.m.
Oh, okay. That's one of the reasons I came down to give you the email address. Wow.
To give me the email address?
Well, I didn't know if you knew it.
Unbelievable.
I didn't know if you knew it.
I copied you in.
Seth, what brings you south besides snow?
Oh, he's their at-large correspondent.
TV.
He goes everywhere. Capital OTB TV? Come on.
I thought they didn't let you out of that capital region.
Well, they don't, actually. We're just kidding.
I escaped.
He's like a hothouse flower.
But except the studios. There was one day this winter I looked up, and it's in Celsius. So I had there's a clock on the camera that shows the studio temperature, but it's in Celsius. I'm in there freezing. I'm going out in the other part of the building to warm up.
Is the time in Celsius
the time is also a problem, but so I go on and do one of the conversion things. It was 62 degrees in the studio. It's like keeping meat fresh in there. They aren't keeping me fresh.
Hey, looking at Mike, I was going to talk about. He'll remember.
Hey,
he'll remember the racing the old submarine racing office over there with Humphrey.
Yeah.
He would keep that at 50 degrees. Remember that? It would be 85 degrees outside. We'd all be wearing our sports coats, freezing to death. As he keeps, somebody would walk over, like turn it up. Next thing you know, it's back down to 50. We were freezing in there.
Yeah. You're gone. You're out of here, Seth Merrill. Everybody, come on. We got. I you had your chance yesterday.
I was going to go over in the press office and ask one of these guys to be on the show with me.
Well, they're here now. So you this is where you come. Give him a microphone. Boy, oh boy. Oh my God! This is some operation.
This is quite a production here.
Hold on.
At least we got plenty of chairs.
Give me that. There we go. Oh, this is what. Have I ever had you on the show like this, Dave Grenig in Florida?
I don't know. I really don't know. My memory is not as good as yours is, so if you say yes, I'll agree with it. If you say no, I'll agree with that.
Do you come down here often?
Every year.
Every year for the Florida Derby.
For Florida Derby.
How many years?
God, I've been here since coming down to the Florida Derby since at least 94, or 95, 95.
Jay did a couple for sure, because I got big-footed out of the...
Maybe I missed one, but I didn't think I missed too many.
Jay planned his visits based on if there were colossal crab claws available.
And hockey games to go to. See, he wouldn't have come this week because the Panthers aren't home. So he wouldn't have come this week because he would have switched. The Panthers are on a 4-game road trip.
Well, I've got a picture of you, me, and Jay over here at when Las Brisas closed and moved over here. The guy, the
same guy. Yeah,
use the microphone.
The
I can't remember. Oh, we're on the air. I didn't know we were on the air. I thought we were. A good thing I didn't say anything like really off the wall. I don't remember the place. Yeah, it was Alberto's place. The same Alberto from Las Brisas, but
right.
I don't remember the name of the place over
what
there.
What was the name of the bar that on Las Brisas on the beach? The bar just south.
On the beach?
On the beach, on the boardwalk.
Boy, there's so
little
many
dive
of them.
Bar.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of those.
Was it Nick's?
No.
Well, I don't know.
But you're saying it was on the beach.
It was right on the boardwalk.
Yeah, I don't.
Just, I mean, you could hear the noise of Las Brisas, and then you could hear the noise that we used to make at their place, and I can't think of the name of it. Hollywood Beach Resort, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
All I remember is I was
right up Arizona.
I was at that place one night with a bunch of racetrack people, and the next table was Davy Jones from the
Monkees.
Yeah.
Or Davy Jones.
Yeah. He was great. He was one of the most colorful guys.
Everyone raves. He used to go hang at Payson Park. And everybody said
well, he had horses.
So much
and he was going training them up somewhere on a farm up near Payson.
He rode as a young boy. He was a rider. I don't know if he rode in the afternoons or just amateur races, but he either rode over jumps or he was in a yard. He was somebody's lad.
Dave Joseph tells the greatest story about Davy Jones. He went up to interview him when Dave was working for the Miami Sun Sentinel at his farm. And they were standing outside on the road by the farm, and a car drives by of, like, young kids. And they drive by, and then they screech to a halt and drive back. And they look at him, and they go, "Aren't you?" And he goes back to me, "Yeah, I'm an effing monkey." Just like that. It was great. Dave tells it better than me, but... He was such a colorful guy. I remember watching him after his horses would run sometimes, and he'd be huddling with his people, and just you know the horse would run bad, and they'd be screaming and excuses and everything. And he was just so funny, great guy.
There's a picture, Dave. Also, I'm going to put up of you. I think you and me and Mike, we were at I drove by this morning, in fact, for lunch, the Greek place, the little Greek joint.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, well, on the beach where they dance.
Yeah,
next to tables. Yeah,
JG's and
Gyros.
I can't remember the name.
We were there. There's a picture. A picture of you holding up baklava.
That I don't remember.
There's a lot of don't remembers.
It was a long time ago.
That's what I'm saying. There's a lot of don't remembers because
that was when the old Gulfstream. You know that was a long time ago now.
How long? It's like 06, 07?
2008, I think. 07 was the first year here. We harkened back.
I thought it was 06. I thought.
Might have been 06. Yeah. I went.
It was Barbaro.
I went Barbaro was 06. And
that was the
year. That's the year we were talking about that upstairs.
About the Mike, stats, yeah.
So Barbaro won post 10. Everyone's getting all hot and bothered by Forte's post 11, yet Barbaro won from post 10.
Big
and then
Brown.
Big Brown won from post 12. And it's
but
just
Big
a lot
Brown
of fodder.
Won from post 20 in the Derby, and they picked it because.
Because right. They could.
Yeah. They could, and they wanted to prove just how good he was. It was incredible that they did that.
Let's segue to Forte. I said this to Todd the other day. Aren't you better off away from all the, you know, all the potential issues going into the turn? Wouldn't you?
You know, the biggest potential issue going into the turn when you're in post 11 is that you wind up about 8 wide. If you commit to go and then 4 or 5 others inside you go, or one of the ones inside you, and there's some lightly raced, very green horses in this field who, you know, if they don't take the turn right or one of the jocks checks, and you see it all the time, especially in these turf races here. One jock gets in trouble, he checks, the horse goes to the outside, and 3 of them outside him get carried outside. You know, I think that's the worry. You can control a lot of your scenario. You know, Todd's got the best horse, he's got the best rider, but you cannot control from the gate, especially to that first turn, what others do in there, and what other jocks and what other horses do in there. So that's the worry for me. And from post 11, I think there's a lot more danger than if you're somewhere in the middle where you can just kind of ease yourself back. And, you know, if he's 5th to 6th, 3 wide, obviously no problem. He could wind up 5 wide, or he could wind up by no fault of their own, or he could wind up pushed back to 7th, 8th, 9th, and you have to come through a lot of traffic. He's still the best horse. Look, I didn't pick against him. But, you know, if you're Todd and you're Mike Rapoli and Vinny Viola, you're going to be nervous for that, you know, until you clear that first turn in the spot you probably would like to be, or even close to. You know, I don't think he has to be in the premier spot like he wound up in the Fountain of Youth to win. That's how much better he is than the rest of the field. You just don't want something disastrous to happen that's out of your control.
I look at it a bit differently. I think he's going to run away from the gate, and wherever that puts him, it puts him. He could be in the second flight. If Mike's right and there's a cavalry charge of horses going to the lead, he doesn't have to be there. He just has to be in that second flight, but get away from the gate a little bit. And I agree with you, Steve. I don't want to be post 4, post 5, where a horse from the left comes over, a horse from the right comes over, now I'm squeezed back, and now I'm 9th or 10th. He could be 5th or 6th or even 7th, depending on how many horses go to the lead, as long as he's in that second flight of horses and doesn't get pushed all the way back. And he is the best horse in the race, I do think.
By a lot.
Like I said, I think he's, comparatively speaking, he is a Barbaro type in this field. He is a Big Brown type in this field. Is he Barbaro? Is he Big Brown? Remains to be seen. He's got a pretty darn nice resume to be headed that direction. But in this particular field, I think he's that elite.
Like I wrote coming into today, you know, Todd's won this race 6 times. The shortest price of all those 6, hard to believe, with Todd, is 8-5. And this horse is going to be 3-5. So obviously the expectations here and the gap in talent between him and the rest of the field are a lot higher than any of Todd's previous winners. So
right, but did you look to see what any price of some of his, because he's lost the race a lot too.
That's true. I'm just talking about his winners. No,
I get it. But there might be horses that he sent out that were shorter than 8-5 that didn't get the job done either.
Fair point. If there is a potential upsetter, should things go awry, or is there a price that is fun to utilize in here? We talked to Scully earlier. We were trying to find somebody to, you know, kind of boost things along.
My sort of boost things along, I don't know if he can, I know he can't, I shouldn't say I know he can't win. I don't think he can win the race, but there's a maiden in here. His name is Mr. Peaks. He was purchased privately after second in a maiden race here going 3/4 on March 12th. But the horse he was second to, the horse's name is A La Carte. The horse is a 5-year-old who's run, that's how desperate they are to fill dirt races down here, that they're already in March going 3 and up on the dirt. The race had a whopping 6 horses in it. He was a 5-year-old who validated a number that he ran the first time. A La Carte. So that horse is okay, A La Carte. And this horse was second to him, and he's by California Chrome out of a Tis Wonderful mare. I think he can get the distance, you know, or he'll be okay around 2 turns. Is it going to be tomorrow?
Probably not. But could he be a price? Could he fill out a decent number? At a decent price? Yeah, I think he can.
I think the one thing we can say for sure about Mr. Peaks, if he breaks, he's going to be on the lead. Safi has sort of already committed to that. And look, you know, horse gets loose in the lead, and everybody kind of sits back and lets him roll along there, or amble along there in the front end. It'll enhance his chances, but, you know, two turns, he's never been beyond six, and now he's going nine furlongs. It certainly is a lot to ask. Nautical Star, Safi's other horse owned by C2 Racing, they've kind of been pointing for this since they bought him. They bought him a little earlier than they bought Mr. Peak, so they've had a little bit longer time getting him acclimated to the system in the barn. Mr. Peak has only been in the barn a couple of weeks, so I don't know if that has any bearing one way or the other on how he might perform, but it was a surprise when Safi put the four in. I mean, and we all expected West Coast Cowboy. We sort of expected Nautical Star, although he didn't admit to that until after the entries were closed. Mr. Peaks was kind of an afterthought or a late minute entry in here. So whether that means anything or not, I don't know.
Mike, talk to me again about this Cyclone Mischief. How's he been training along? I can't get off him. I just wanted to...
He trained terrific. I mean, the best I saw him train was before that allowance race back in January when he first got here. He's trained okay coming out of it. I kind of like him for a price in here because I think that last race was way better than it appears on paper, because I'm convinced the rail was not any place you wanted to be near that day, and he was, you know, hooked on the rail the whole way. And even after Forte went by him, he dug in pretty well against Rocket Can, before Rocket Can, who was outside of him, finally edged away to be second best. So I think it's a sneaky good effort. You know, he ran a buyer that was equal to his career best in the allowance race. He's been a mile and a 16th a couple of times now, three times, four times, whatever. So that's got to help him out. He's not going to be in front this time. You know, he doesn't have to take back. He's going to probably be third, fourth going into that first turn. I think that's Dale was, you know, be in a perfect world, was going to get that same trip he got in the allowance race, sitting behind a couple of speed horses. And I think if he can get the mile and an eighth, which is a question for him still, obviously, like many of the others in here, I thought he was sneaky. I wound up picking him second. I think Mage is going to get bet way more than that 10-1 morning line. He's sort of the buzz horse right now. You know, just off of that effort in the Fountain of Youth, you know, broke slow. Everybody saw he broke slow. He rushed up wide, got hung out, you know, and wound up finishing fourth. He was hung out in the better part of the racetrack, so you got to take that into consideration a little bit. This horse has a lot of talent. There's no doubt about it. And Gustavo Delgado has a history of running big price horses, mm-hmm. Run well in this race. This horse isn't going to be anywhere near what those horses were, but I think Mage is going to wind up somewhere around 6-1, maybe close to the second choice between him and Fort Bragg. And I just think he's a bit of a sleeper, but probably a bit of an underlay too.
Fair enough. Let me ask you about the girls, and then we'll jump around a little bit. Talk about the Oaks, which somebody's going to emerge here.
Dave, I'll let you go with this because I know Dave has a horse that he likes quite a bit, and he also agrees that it won't be the morning line price, but he thinks she's a little bit sneaky in here.
Yeah, I think Affirmative Lady, Graham Motion thought enough of this filly to run her in two stakes as a maiden last year. He sprinted her twice, thought based on talent that she could get the job done, but she's just not a sprinter, and she was third one time and fourth another time. Then he ran her in the Demoiselle on an awful racetrack, very sloppy track. The race did not come back very fast, numbers-wise, but I thought she ran courageously game race. She got beat a neck by Julia Shining, who would be favored in here big time, and a lot of people do like, and Julie Shining, who was a disappointing third in the Suncoast Stakes, runs next week in the Ashland at Keeneland. But she ran, I just liked the way she ran. The number didn't come back good, like I said, but that was a sloppy track. Came back in the Busanda, probably bounced a little bit, and she did face a horse that's going to fly under the radar, at least until next week, a Colt, who's been, you know, winning, racing, and actually hasn't been racing that much. She ran in January, hasn't run since, for Chad Brown, but she'll run in the Gazelle, and I think a Colt is actually a serious player, and she may show that next week in the, hopefully she shows that next week in the Gazelle. Then Graham put blinkers on this filly last time out. I know the early
form. I'm not sure what it shows in the newspaper, but the early PP show that blinkers on this time. It was blinkers on last time in the maiden race, and she sat up close to it behind a slow pace, split horses nicely, and drew off. She's got a win around two turns on the racetrack. She's listed as 10-1 on the morning line. I don't think she's going to be that price. I'll take half the price, to be honest with you, because I'm not enamored with this field. I thought Miracle was very good. Gave a very credible effort, I should say, in the Rachel Alexandra first time open company, first time two turns. Had to go to Gulfstream, had to go to Fairgrounds to get that, and she ran pretty well. She gave pretty mischievous everything she wanted. Pretty mischievous second last time out in the Fairgrounds Oaks. Miracle probably be forwardly placed, but so will probably Dorth Vader, who, look, the last time Dorth Vader ran mile 16th around two turns at Gulfstream Park, she got beat 11 lengths by Atomically, who's in this field. Atomically didn't necessarily, you know, show much in the Breeders' Cup or show much here. I know Atomically was sort of a buzz horse going into the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, and I think it was solely on the fact that she was purchased privately and transferred to Todd Pletcher. I don't think any of her numbers were that great last year. It's a two-year-old. Mike can speak to that more than I can because it was here, but I don't get the impression that Atomically, I think Atomically is going to be overbet, and I'm against Atomically, but I like Affirmative Lady.
Yeah, one thing about Dorth Vader in that race in the My Dear Girl, first of all, she was stretching out from 5.5 to a mile and a 16th. She'd get in some trouble, and she wasn't a seasoned or as good a horse as she is now, obviously. The question mark is the mile and a 16th going two turns. She went into the, we've talked about it, she went into the Devonadale training as well as a horse could possibly train, and she ran to a works. She also did benefit from the racetrack bias that day. She was outside in an absolutely perfect position. Miguel Vasquez did a great job with her that day, rating her off the very fast pace and then moving when he needed to and drawing off with plenty left at the end. But she's come out of the race and trained just as well. That March 23rd work was terrific. Will she bounce? Will she regress? I mean, she went from an 85 to a 52, from the Sandpiper to the Gasparilla, and now she goes back to an 81 buyer. The work says no, that she's ready to repeat the race or move forward. The only thing we know for certain in here, she won't be 46-1 on Saturday. She's probably going to wind up stalking Miracle from that outside position again. It'll be interesting to see how the racetrack plays on Saturday. I think the rail was dead. The outside was better on Holy Bull Day. I thought it was the same on Fountain of Youth Day. Hopefully, it's not that way on Florida Derby Day. That you want to think you're playing on a square playing field all the way across. But you know, we've got a bunch of main track races earlier in the day to kind of get an idea what to expect by the time we get to the Oaks and the Florida Derby, at least racetrack wise.
Yeah, I mean that horse hasn't been mentioned all morning until you just mentioned. I'm talking about Dorth Vader. You know, sometimes we look at those ones that scored boxcars and just kind of poo-poo them next time, but I don't know. You said you've been training great. Actually, Michael Yates has a couple horses
Yates has got,
throughout the day.
It's funny you say that.
Cajun's
Magic.
Right?
Dean delivers as well. He's
running well. One of the many in there that you could look at in a pretty wide open race. Right. Weyburn, to me, is the horse to beat. But
Jimmy Jerkins, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, look, that horse has run two terrific races over this racetrack. Won this race last year going away. Seems to have cycled back to that form again, running that race over this race, same racetrack, same distance last time. Came out of the race, I talked to my Palmetto's colleague, Mike Vesey. I haven't seen all the works from him for tomorrow up there yet, but we did discuss Weyburn, and he was very high on the way Weyburn has worked for this race, too. So, you know, I think he's got a pretty good shot in there.
That's the ninth, and it is Mike's best bet of the day. The Sir Shackleton going 7-8, Weyburn 7-2 with Ortiz, with Jose. Mike, I want to ask you about a couple of spots. And Dave, what other races are you covering?
I have everything else. I'm Mike's caddy. I'm Mike's caddy. He's got the Sir Shackleton, the Florida Derby, and the Ghost Zapper, and I'm everything else. I'm everything.
Holy
gross.
Cow!
Yeah,
well.
he's the turf man.
Wow, I love it. Well, speaking of turf, the Appleton is between the Oaks and the Derby, and you've picked 20-1 Super Dormy.
I just thought the race was so wide open. It's going to be a total trip race. I thought those two races before that, especially the mile race, were pretty impressive. He was ranked last time. It looked like they wanted to, you know, wrestle him back, and I thought he still ran pretty well, considering he was giving Edgar a hard time, and he had to kind of maybe make a move with him earlier than he wanted to. Just taking a shot at a price. I look, the morning line here, he might be 20-1 in the morning line. I don't think he may go post with 20-1. I didn't see the morning lines when I made my picks. I just thought he might be worth a price. I don't think there's that much separating him and the favorites in here that's not worth taking a shot at a race that's going to be, you know, decided by trip.
I don't disagree.
It's a fun race. It took me a while to figure out who to even write about here. Shug's got a couple. It looks like there's a lot of speed in the race. Shug's got a couple of closers in the
yep.
field. But the
Dreams
problem
of
is
tomorrow from the outside.
And who's coming off a very nice race at
yep.
Tampa, by the way. It was a solid effort, but it is the outside draw. And then Fort Washington, who just hates to break. If he could just break just a little bit better, get himself a little bit more in the game than he's been his last two starts here, I think he's very dangerous. And then I'll tell you another horse I think is dangerous, and I guess we have to see how the turf's playing, but Striker for Josie Carroll. She stretched him out to a one-turn mile or to a mile on the grass, put blinkers on the horse, and the horse ran a hole in the wind. Now, there does seem to be a lot of speed in the race. Is that horse faster than the other ones? I don't know. I asked her the other day about, was it the blinkers? And she said the blinkers helped him focus. The turf really improved him. And, you know, the horse, I don't know what he's listening. I don't care what the morning line says, but the horse was very good last time out. Maybe it's the kind of horse that gets out there and people don't take it seriously. And the next thing you know, they're all chasing and this horse is crossing the finish line.
And one more horse I'm going to throw in the mix that's not going to be a decent price is Kelly's horse on the rail, the Jersey Bred. He's pure gold.
He's pure gold.
Coming out of that race in Tampa. I tell you, some of those races at Tampa are sneaky good.
Oh, they're more than sneaky good because nobody wants to run on the grass here. They all send, Chad sends, Clement sends, they all send over there. Graham Motion, they're all the horses, especially the turf races.
Exactly, and he's going to save a little bit of ground, and this race is just... It's a grab.
It's wide open. That's why it's positioned where it's positioned, because if you think, as I wrote in the preview, if you think the Florida Derby is a foregone conclusion,
good point.
Well, you've got this race in 13. You can play a double. You could probably go 7, 8, 9 deep in here and still not feel it, and may not hit it, even if Forte wins.
Well, I'll tell you, Mike, much like you, in terms of doing the handicapping without the prices on the page, Lucky Curland got to me. George Abreu, and then the line comes out, and he's 30-1 off the claim.
Not George Abreu, it's Fernando.
Excuse me, the brother. But there's nothing wrong with Lucky Curlin.
No. The horse actually blew out well for the race, too. So it seems to be doing well in the new barn. But this is a total trip race. Run this race, you know, three times, you probably get three.
Here's what's wrong with Lucky Curlin. The jockey, who I don't know, and actually I ran into his new agent this morning, Ruben Munoz, who's going to be taking over his book. I'm sure this jockey is talented. He's 4 for 139 this year.
I'm just looking. I'm looking for a horse to hit the board. 38-1. Just underneath.
I'm never going to talk you off a
pick them third.
I'm never going to talk you off a horse that's that price. But when you say there's, you know, when you're looking to poke holes, I could poke a hole there. The jockey's
fair enough.
Having a good meet.
Mike, we need to end Dave, since you're doing all the turf races. I need help in that Sand Springs. It is terrific, and I thought this was completely wide open.
What race is that? That's
the 10th. Where market segmentation is 2-1, and she doesn't have.
Yeah, you know why she's two to one, because Chad Brown trained her.
Exactly.
I tried to talk to Chad. She's okay. I'll tell you somewhat interesting. I was able to call up a couple of races of this horse's. You know, going back to Graham, this Jowza.
The European.
Now, granted, it was a mile and a quarter race, but this horse showed a pretty good. This horse was forward in the race back in July. Was forwardly placed. Granted, going a mile and a quarter, they weren't lighting it up, but the horse really looked impressive. I mean, he's a gorgeous chestnut filly. I don't know what happened in the Group 3 in France last September, but this horse has been with Graham for a while. Got back to him. Came to him late last year. The horse started working at Fair Hill in January, went to Palm Meadows shortly thereafter. I thought she was interesting because I thought it was a very wide open race, and I was looking for a little bit of a stranger. I didn't see a ton of pace in here. I thought maybe if she could get out there and control things, she'd be interesting. Cherie DeVoe's horse Perseverancia coming back off a left. She said she has a few things to work through. She just might be one of those horses that just doesn't get too far back on a race, and I don't see a whole ton of pace. And then Brendan Walsh has two in here. Either one could be competitive in Princess Theorem and Arm Candy, although Arm Candy is stuck outside.
And Mike, I know you picked Princess Theorem, but it really felt like she did not move forward last year, and that she sort of was stuck in second gear.
Well, she's certainly in good form now. I mean, every race is better than the next. She came back from a 9-month layoff, finished fourth behind Chad's horse when they met back on December 31st. But again, this horse was coming off a 9-month layoff. You look at her two subsequent races, she's improved. With each subsequent start, she's going to reunite with Jose Ortiz, who guided her to victory in an A other than. She obviously likes this racetrack. She can handle the distance. So, again, a little bit of a price in another race where, you know, these races, these 10, 12-horse fields on the turf, you know, even just trying to figure out how the pace scenario is going to work out. When you think one horse is going to make the lead and another horse is going to, it never seems to work out that way. And then they get bunched and the traffic. And so why not go for a price again? I mean, it's nothing I would hang my hat on. But I just thought if you can get 8-1 on Princess Theorem, and maybe you will. I mean, she was 44-1 in the Honey Facts and outran her odds there too. So she's obviously an improving filly, and you like to see that.
The Sanibel Island, the 3-year-old filly's going 7.5, goes as the 11th. It feels like a pretty straightforward affair with Mrs. Astor, Love Appeals, and Breath Away. The boys' version, the Cutler Bay, though, in the third, guys, 3-year-olds going 7.5, field of 9. I thought this was really well matched. The likes of Harry Time and Dunedin, King's Fortune for Pletcher and Irad. I thought Drinking Problem was okay for Jose Garofalo. The spy novel off the claim, right? What do we make of the Cutler Bay early?
I landed on Dunedin. You get Saez for the first time. Joe Rocco rode the horse last year. This horse was running, you know, that Grade 3 Futurity at Belmont last fall. At Aqueduct. She got beat 3/4 of a, it was a scramble to the wire. Got beat 1/2 length by Nagarok, or Corrigan spelled backwards, and then that horse ran third in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf and third in the Eddie Logan. So that, I thought that the Futurity was actually a decent race. Kelsey Danner, numbers off the layoff are just okay, but I know she's been wanting to stretch this horse out in distance, and why not give it a shot here this time? 2 turns, 7.5 furlongs, plus you get Saez, I thought was a big improvement over who had been riding her. Him.
I picked Harry Time. I just thought the third start of the form cycle. The last race was very good. Second to Farbridge, who was odds on that day. He was perfect, 2 for 2. Nobody was going to beat that horse that day, but she beat everybody else in there in a 12-horse field. So you got to say, give her credit for that as well. She turns back to 7.5. Hopefully she'll get a little pace to run at in here. I just thought in her current form, if she could work out a trip, and again, I belabor that point in these turf races. It's only a 9-horse field, so a little easier to get a clean run. Behind Enemy Lines is an interesting horse for Jack Sisterson. Hard to say what kind of quality field she was meeting in her last race over in Ireland, but she seems to be training well. She worked her last race on the turf. Her last work on the turf is with a horse called Ballymoo, who was Stakes Place, and she seemed to hold her own there. So hard to say. The biggest problem is knowing how these horses will handle this particular turf course after coming over from Europe and running on, for the most part, softer courses and obviously different courses. Well, this horse last race was on a faster Peter course, but. Again, even with some of the later races, we have some standout Euro horses coming over here, but they've all run on less than firm courses, and, you know, even with the rain this week, this horse course is probably going to be pretty hard by tomorrow and pretty firm, and trust me, it's a lot different course than what they're used to over there.
I got to ask about the two maiden races, and we'll let you guys go. And, Mike, this first race came up repeatedly this week. Dale Roman sat in yesterday. He's got Frank Jones's Shadwell-bred English Channel filly that he says is okay. He kind of sounded to me like he thought she would need one. How about Shug with Ogima Bay? Happens to be a half to Divisadero and all those other nice Hinkle babies, the couple Gunnison that, of course, they... Buff Bradley had. There's Spansiv. Todd was with me on Monday. He said of the maidens that he's running this week, Spansiv was the one he thought had the best shot. On and on here. There's other pedigree to be considered. Proctor has got that Millennium Park stretching out and moving to the turf. Harvey's Little Goyle, Gloria's Princess, the half-sister. There's a lot going on in the opener tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, you've mentioned about eight already. You
yeah.
probably make a case for most of them. Just throw a dart against the wall as far as I'm concerned in here. I mean, you got horses training everywhere. First-time starters, the majority of the horses in the field. Obviously, I'm a Sure Thing is going to take money off of the two races and has that experience edge. But who knows if one or two of these other first-time starters are something special or not. It's really hard to tell. Just having not seen many of them. Malibu Smart and Ogema Bay I have seen, Fidel and Shug, and their works are just average, but they've been working on the dirt. This is turf, so that you know, that might be meaningless, obviously. I wound up picking, who did I wind up picking? Oh, Motown Mayhem for Mark Cassie. I think that's the one I picked.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this horse, the reason I picked it is because it's a full sister to Super Hoity Toity,
right? Who runs later?
Who's already a proven stakes horse on the turf? So that was the only kind of little thing I could see in here. I have no idea what to expect out of Bill Mott's horse coming out of Payson, but they reached out for Irad for this one, and that they don't usually use Irad that much.
Well,
so
but you got.
I know Junior's not here, and yeah. that would have probably been their first choice, but. You know, they reached out for Irad. I doubt he's been up there and been on her, but the fact that he goes there, this horse will be a little bit overbet, obviously. You can watch the board. Maybe it'll help you. Maybe it won't. I mean, to me, either you take an all button in here or you just pass and go on to the next one. It's just too much of a guessing game for me.
There's actually a second division of this race that goes as the sixth, I mean, which is really something that there's two dozen lightly raced turf maidens that went the whole winter before they broke camp. And there's some nice ones here. This group is a little bit more accomplished in terms of experience.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little bit of an edge, but again, you are dealing with
a
lot of big question marks in here. I didn't know what to do. The ones that have run, none of them looked that impressive. The ones that we have workout reports on didn't seem that impressive. I don't know what to do. I took a shot with Mirabella. They paid a lot of money for this horse. She was 6-5 in her first start off. I think a couple of decent gate works last, if I remember right, back at Saratoga. Obviously was a big disappointment. They put her away. Now they bring her back on the grass. Sometimes when this happens with Tide, it's just like, well, we know this horse isn't that good on the dirt. We'll take a shot and hope, you know, she runs well on the turf. But she had one turf work up at Palmetto's, and she worked with 6 Minus and kind of held her own with 6 Minus, who's you know, an older and more experienced and more accomplished horse. So with that in mind, the fact she's got the rail, maybe she's got some speed, maybe she can get loose in the lead, I didn't know what to do in here. This is another race that you know, as far as betting goes, I know I'm not interested in at all, but she gets Luis Saez, so that's my thought. I don't know if Dave looked it over and has any opinion there.
Little interested in Josie Carroll's horse here, Andra Mosh, big price, but has some decent works on the turf course at Payson Park. By Arrogate, you're kind of not necessarily thinking turf there, but you know, just she does a fairly well. She has some decent numbers first time out for Josie. She hasn't, you know, had a great year yet. It's only run two wins from like 9 starters, but I found that interesting that, yeah. This, just looking at the works on the grass, they look pretty good.
Well, should also mention from a pedigree standpoint that I'll Have Another's little sister shows up in here. That's the Archangel. If you hadn't picked up on that, Roger Atfield sends that one out, and Chad's got the one with Peter Bradley, Get Your Kicks, the Quality Road as well, coming off of a mile try on the main track. Any other final thoughts? Anything special? You got anything clever that you want to add, Mike?
No, I mean, I just think, you know, it's going to be a fun card. The Florida Derby, you know, we'll know a lot more coming out than we know going in, or maybe we won't. I mean, maybe Forte wins by 5 again, and that's
spot.
Just the way it is. Instead of being 2-1 in the Derby's 8-5, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, with the 20 horse field, and you know, there's going to be talk ad infinitum about the Japanese horses, whether there's one, two, three, or five in there. You know, I don't know that any of the ones going to be no shorter than 2-1 in them, right?
No, I was only kind of half kidding. Just he will solidify his position atop the division with a big effort Saturday, or we'll just lend to some more question marks if something happens and for whatever reason he does not win here. And it makes what's a pretty wide open division would make that even more wide open. Right now we know Todd's in control. He's got three of the top four horses in our Derby watch, but still has some questions to answer with Tapper Trice, and there's a long way to go between now and Derby Day. Like our colleague Jay Pribman says, don't ask me who I like in the Derby until I draw the race.
Amen.
Dave Grenig and Mike Welch, everybody. DRF Welch, DRF Grenig, thank you. Always a pleasure. Kate and Bradar going to be about ready to step in. I need a picture, group picture for you guys. Get over there by Hammer. And Caton, you should jump in, because if Andy Biancone does not get here, then we'll have two different choices. There we go. Very nice. See, this is how I got to do it. Caton Brain are about to join in, and go ahead, jump in there, get in there. Come on. Yeah, there you go. You know how I am with this stuff. I'm the original stalkerazzi for the media. I do remember we went to Billy's, right? Dave, I think you're with Dave. You was it Dave was that one? By the way, it was Dave. It was not you at the Greek place. It was Ron Anderson. No, you were at the Greek place. You were at the Greek place, without a doubt. There we go. All right. Too funny.
It was Jay Privman, for sure.
Well,
I know.
Me, Jay,
and I don't remember who the fourth
Mike,
was.
I think
it was Mike.
I think Mike is the fourth. That was at Billy Stone Crab. In fact, I know it was Mike, because I got a picture upstairs while we were waiting for the table with him and Roddy Valenti.
That's right.
Earlier in the evening, without a doubt.
I was telling, you know, I got off the plane last evening. And I haven't been in a while, so I'm having the flashback, you know, driving by Tropical Lakers and boom, boom, getting here. And I was talking about on the show earlier, when your name came up here, all I can think of is you doing your thing in the raised paddock.
In the raised paddock,
starting out, and you were like the, is it Pioneer or Pioneeress? I don't know what it was, but one of the first to do the paddock show. And I can remember you doing, come back in the racing office, you know, getting your stuff together, back and forth.
We would have the fan of the day would be one of the first things we did. And it was, we'd put somebody out from the crowd to come up and handicap the opener with
That's
me.
Right.
And I actually have a few people now and then that will come up and say, hey, I was your fan of the day,
oh, really?
Which is great.
That is
but,
funny.
But yeah, it totally different. I actually went through three, this is my third Gulfstream paddock, because before we had the elevated paddock, there was the old paddock,
right.
And I did work for a little bit during the old paddock, too.
And you know what weird things you remember? We had that big paper that instead of the racing form,
yes.
Right, whatever
yeah,
that was
Gulf,
called.
I think it was like the Gulfstreamer or something like that.
Yeah, it lasted 1 year, I think. We
yep.
tried it out, and I always remember for some reason you were carrying this big paper around and, you know, handicamming off it, because she was right by the, you know, right by the old racing office. They, you know, come in during the middle, and she'd be in there doing her thing and go back out and giving everybody winners. But I was saying, you were the best from day one, and you continue to be the best.
Well, thank you. I was trying to figure out which was my first Florida Derby, and I didn't. I really couldn't come up with it, because I actually came here as a kid too, and it went before you were allowed to have kids at the track. My dad and I would sneak in the morning. It was in Florida, they didn't allow minors in for the races, but you could come in the morning if you were an owner's kid to watch horses train, and so we would sneak in. I'll never forget Seattle Slough. Racing, but over at Hialeah, and Spectacular Bid at Gulfstream, and we'd sneak in the morning, watch training workouts, and then I'd have to spend the afternoon dodging any security guards. I'd go in the ladies' room for a while, and then I'd come out, and I'd get in the... Unfortunately, it was a crowd that was big enough in those days where you had no problem.
People,
you just
yeah.
could hide behind people, but when... for that would have been the first years, and at one point my dad put me on his shoulders so that I could see over the crowd on the apron when Spectacular Bid came down the stretch. It was amazing. And that's kind of, you know, I do miss, we'll get that kind of a crowd, but it's a different kind of a crowd and atmosphere, I think, here. And I kind of miss that energy of, you know, where you would have kids able to hide in between people.
Well, I was talking about the same thing. Also, Florida Derby Day was Florida Derby Day. I mean, and I didn't realize how big it was until I got here. And I've sent, you know, the tickets all said good for every day except Florida Derby
Right.
Day. Remember?
Oh, exactly.
You had to get your own people.
You had to have a separate, kind of almost like Kentucky
to get
Derby
in the
now.
Gate. And it was just, it was like, wow, this was wonderful. But that's the flashbacks keep coming. I've only been here, you know, less than 24 hours, and it's had a lot of fun times down here, you know.
Oh, this was the best. I mean, this is the place that everything happened for me. I mean, the great horses,
right.
The great people. You know, so as far as professionally, I think it was Holy Bull's year was the first year that that I remember covering and working the races for the Florida Derby. So
that was a good one.
So that was a very good one. And we had seen him come over for at Calder
right.
And ran in the Stallion Stakes and came back
right.
As a 3-year-old. And but when you think about the horses that ran here, Florida Derby and Florida Derby Day as well, in some of the supporting stakes races. And I heard you, Rick, talking about the jockeys, and,
right.
And I think about the trainers, too. It's right about this time of year that Cigar shipped out to run in the Dubai World Cup the first year, and he was based here in Florida all winter long. We watched him train, and most of the assistants, who are now all trainers, were all working for Bill Mott at that time. And so, you know, I think of Ralph Nix now being down here.
It's funny you mentioned that. I was the assistant at the time here, off and on. I got to sign Cigar's papers like twice, and I remember just going, "Wow, this is really
that's cool."
Yeah,
that is cool.
You know, just and then, but Bill would Bill was in control here. I mean, he had waves and waves of horses.
It was like an army. Like, they talk about Aiden's army now when they come over for the Breeders' Cup, but that was really the nature of Mott's stable at that time. It's pretty amazing.
Horses like Jerry, and just I just remember these. They just kept coming up.
And Pletcher was still an assistant at that time. So, to have been here through that and to see trainers like Todd, who went from being an assistant to now having the powerhouse stables that they have, it's just been, it's really amazing to sit back and watch it all.
Let me fold in, because we're going to end up, we got about 10-plus minutes. I want to get a chance with Lafitte Pinkai the third as well. LP is in Arkansas, back at Oaklawn, and Caton's here, Hammer's here. Lafitte, good morning.
What's going on, Steve? Security guards, ladies' rooms. I thought I was listening to the wrong show.
but you want to be on this one, right? Just after hearing it.
How are you, Caden?
I'm good, Lafitte. We miss you.
I know. Finally, it's been ages. We got to cross paths for a moment at Tampa, the Tampa Bay Derby, and now with all the 3-year-old preps ramping up and. What we think we know right now and what the narratives will be in 7 days are likely to be so different between the 5 prep races, the major for the final majors over the next 2 Saturdays, the 2 this week at the Florida Derby, Arkansas Derby, next week Wood, Bluegrass, San Anita Derby. We'll have a much better idea of what this road to the Derby really feels like.
Well, and for your part there, give us your Arkansas Derby look.
We have we're on all day tomorrow on Fox Sports 2. We have a sit down with Luis Sella. Will be with me on set. We'll be with Tim Yakteen as well, of course, with Reincarnate, the 5-2 morning line favorite. Really good playing, Frank Fletcher piece being put together, born here, raised here, the race that he's always wanted to win with Rocket Can. Nick Juarez, a package that we're putting together. Gary Stevens, Kentucky Derby Final Four. A really good story involving the two Eagles River owners. We're going to try to jam that all in. We have, I don't know, 15 hours to do it, so I'm fairly confident we'll be able to pull it off.
Excellent. And then what's your opinion in the race, Lafitte?
I'm a sucker for a climax runner, like a real explosive closer. Not horses that win from off the pace. The grind, that have to be encouraged. Red Route 1 has some, there's some, I don't want to go too far, but there's some dramatic acceleration when he's given his cue and when he really turns it on. And when he's allowed to drop way back, and I'm never going to question anything Steve Asmussen does, the man who's won more races than any other driver in North America, I hope he's not too close to the pace. His three best races, essentially, when he lost contact with the field, that big third-place finish to Forte and Loggins in the Breeders' Futurity, that second-place finish to Arabian Light in the Southwest, and we saw more of the same in the Rebel. It's drop anchor, make one run. I get it, traffic's always going to be a concern, but these are the kinds of horses that fans really fall in love with. The free-running, front-running, come and catch me if you can type, and the Silky Sullivans and the other type of closers in terms of the style fans seem to gravitate towards.
Red Route 1, putting on the blinkers. Hayden, do you have, while I got you, do you have an Arkansas Derby opinion?
I do. I like Rocket Can. I'm very eager to see him. I think that I'm just curious to see as he gets more time to mature and even kind of a different type of track maybe than what he ran over last time out. But I thought he ran better than he was given credit for. I know he was no match for the winner, but I do think that I think he's a very nice, or I should say, I don't think he was given as much credit as other horses who have come through Gulfstream because of not being flashy, not a flashy time, not, you know, but I just think he's progressing nicely. And I was a little sad that he didn't run here, but I do think he's going to be tough in there. I have to tell you, though, they have a filly that I like a lot in the fantasy.
Go ahead.
And that is Grand Love. In watching her workout pattern, she is kind of following the path of most of those Steve Asmussen really good horses that are suddenly getting good at the right time. I love the Tyler's in to ride her, and I just think she's taken a while to kind of reach her best stride, but especially if it's a fast track, I think she's going to be interesting.
Looks like a fast track, and the weather should be gorgeous tomorrow. The infield will be thronging. Lafitte, you got a fantasy thought?
She is looking lucky, the filly drawn inside. A lot of buzz over the filly that Kate mentioned, though. I've heard her name repeatedly.
This morning here, too, actually, as a wire candidate, Scully, we keep hearing Grand Love just might go out there and forget to stop, as they say. Caton, let me get a couple of Gulfstream opinions in, some of your best thoughts.
I mean, Florida Derby, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm going right with the Forte. I think when it's done, we'll say once again that we made a lot out of something that turned out to not be an issue, which is the post position, only because I think he's just so much better. I am excited to see, and I don't know, I may be mispronouncing it, but Mage. How Mage progresses, and I do think he's a very interesting horse. I don't know what to do with a couple of these other races that are very, you know, especially the Oaks. I think I was going back and forth on several, but the Miracle does look like she kind of may have the right style and may fit in pretty nicely off of that second in the Rachel Alexander with Pretty Mischievous, I think is a little bit better. I wish Andy was here because I'd love to hear about Infinite Diamond. I think she's an improving filly.
I think she's live. And Dave Grenick made a fabulous case for Grand Motion and Affirmative Lady.
I'm real curious to see what she can do because I think this is the type of race where a horse coming out of a maiden win could jump up and win. I definitely believe that. So some of the other races that I thought that the Sir Shackelford is the most competitive race on, that like that would be the all button for me in terms of the multi-race wagers. I really think that's a race where any one of about four or five horses has a big shot. I was interested in Jimmy Durkin's horse, but Wayburn, but he disappoints me every time. Dean Delivers on the rail, is that Yates's horse?
Michael Yates, yeah.
I kind of interested in him, but pace is real murky in that race as to like how it's going to play out. Everybody kind of has the same style, and so I think that you could see a bomb in there. And I'm going to be watching the early races to see how the track plays, because it really. It, I think, will be a different racetrack surface than what we saw, say, for Fountain of Youth or some of the earlier big stakes race days.
Different how?
Well, I'm hoping that I mean, I think Mike alluded to this too, but the rail wasn't great in on some of those previous big race days, and I haven't seen that to be the case here at all lately. So I'm hoping that that's kind of a neutral, a non-issue.
It would always be. It's always preferable that that racing superintendents don't monkey with tracks on big days.
And to be fair, I think
that's
it was,
never happened.
I do think it's kind of has a lot to do with the way this track in particular. You know, Rick, but as well as I do, that the where it's located, as close as it is to the
right,
the shore,
right.
To the ocean,
tides.
You end up having it influenced by tides, by weather, by everything else. But I think the fact that we did get a little bit of rain, to speak of maybe the only substantial rain we've gotten the entire meet has been in this last week, will help it. I really believe that'll tighten it up and keep it consistent.
Let me ask Lafitte too. Lafitte, what's the schedule next week with the big three venues? Where are you going to be?
The Wood is 30 minutes on Big Fox, I know it was the window got shortened a little bit, so just it'll just be the Wood in those 30 minutes, and then actually I'm back here three out of the next four back for Apple Blossom, and then Oakland Handicap, and then in New York for a couple of weeks after that. So yeah, that's we start the Nomad right at the end of summer.
All right, well then we'll talk next week as well. All right,
you got it.
Lafitte Thinkai the Third LP TV on your Twitter. Keep Lafitte fresh. I wanted to catch up with him. We haven't talked the whole season here. And Hammer, where am I seeing you next?
Lexington.
Oh, that's Monday, Tuesday you're in town.
Right.
Excellent. And you?
I will be hitting the road on Tuesday, and we'll be at Keeneland for opening day.
So I'll see you, Keeneland, so we'll do a thing Friday as well.
Excellent.
Kate and Braid are back on the stomp on At the Races, the Twin Spires weekend preview. Thanks to everybody that stopped by, which included Welsh and Glennig and Scully and Schaff and Nick Tamaro. Talk to you Monday, everybody, from Keeneland.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid.